roared at Nick, placed the blade directly under his throat.
I'm warning you, Nick, Peter said coldly. You've come before my sword too many times. Get out of my way! Now!
Just free Daniel, the captain said calmly. Send him with me and we'll go.
What? Peter cried. You will never take another child from me. Not ever. All you will get from me is the edge of my sword.
The devils splashed into the pond, spears and swords pointed at the captain, holding him in check. The captain didn't waver. He kept his guard steady.
Peter, stop this, Nick cried. Look! Open your eyes and look!
He pointed at the bodies around the pool, to Ivy, her unblinking eyes staring up into the mist, to Carlos, lying on the bank, his throat open, a ribbon of blood feeding into the pond.
How much is enough? How many must die? You have your precious lady, just let them go.
Peter tried not to look at the dead devils. They died honorably, heroically. He wouldn't let Nick muddy their deaths, twisting things around. Nick had it backward, that's all.
There's only one bastard to blame for their lives. One,
Peter pointed at the captain.
Him.
No, Peter, Nick said. The captain fought with us. He saved your lady. Does that mean nothing to you?
Peter narrowed his eyes at Nick. It's true, Cricket called. Peter let out a long breath, then set his glare on the captain.
Leave now, right now, and I'll spare you. But the boy, that traitor, he stays. He owes me a debt.
The captain shook his head slowly. I will not leave the boy. Not with you.
The devils tightened their grips on the spears, glanced to Peter. Peter shrugged.
Then you will die, here and now.
Nick spun the point of his spear toward Peter.
No, not this time. I won't watch you murder this man. Not like Leroy. Never again.
Peter saw the conviction in Nick's eyes.
He's not bluffing. He means it by all the gods. This stupid kid means it.
He glared at Nick.
Nick, you're going to get hurt bad. This is your last...
A scream cut through the mist. Peter spun, ready for anything but what he saw.
Ulfgar,
Peter exhaled in a wounded breath. Ulfgar stood near the far end of the pond, his head cocked to one side as though hearing voices, his hair frayed, soot smeared across his face, his dark, brooding eyes haunted, crazed. The mist swirled away from him, and there at his feet lay
Drail. Oh no,
Peter said, and started forward, stopped. Something was wrong. Peter squinted, trying to make sense of what he was seeing. The old elf cradled his arm to his chest. It was turning black, the blackness crawling up his shoulder, then his neck, along his cheek. Drail's face cinched up in pain, and his skin began to smolder.
What madness is this?
Peter hissed. Drail let out another cry, a cry that made Peter's skin crawl. The elf rolled onto his back, began writhing in the grass, blood poured from his eyes, nose, mouth. His back arched, his fingers tore at his chest. He let out a final strangled cry, then lay still.
Peter stood frozen in place. Could do nothing more than stare at the smoldering corpse of his old friend.
No,
Peter murmured.
This isn't possible.
An elf darted forward, sent his spear shooting across the ground, catching Ulfgar in the chest, punching through his chest plate and deep into his heart. Ulfgar stumbled back, looked at the spear like he was just curious.
He grabbed the spear, grunted, and yanked it out. No trace of blood touched the blade.
"What's going on?" Peter whispered.
"His blood is one with the sword," the witch said. "He cannot be stopped, not by mortal sword and spear."
Ulfgar's eyes fell on the lady. He smiled at Peter.
"I will have her head. Come, you runt, you little freak!"
He waved to Peter as though inviting him to a hand of cards.
"Come, see if you can save your queen!"
He kicked Drail's smoldering corpse.
"Come taste Avalok's judgment!"
Peter snarled, sprang out of the pond, and charged Ulfgar. He let out a howl and swung high with his left sword and low with the right. Ulfgar smashed Caliburn against one sword, shattering the blade and knocking the weapon from Peter's grasp. But Peter's second blade sliced into Ulfgar's thigh just above the knee. Ulfgar stumbled and Peter slashed him across the back of the neck. A savage light flashed in Peter's eyes at the feel of steel biting flesh.
"For Drail!"
Peter spun around to finish Ulfgar, but to his horror, to his total disbelief, he found Ulfgar still on his feet. The giant seemed hardly affected by either strike. Peter fell back a step as the wounds healed right before his eyes. Ulfgar pressed in, swinging for Peter's chest. Peter brought his sword to bear at the last second, but was off balance, and the blow knocked the sword from his hand and him to his knees. Cutter rushed forward, jabbing his spear into Ulfgar's stomach. Ulfgar grunted, grabbed the hilt, and used it to knock Cutter into Peter, then stabbed the boy in the back. Peter struggled to pull Cutter up when the boy screamed. Cutter's skin burned, actually sizzling and turning black right beneath Peter's hands. Peter let out a cry of horror, did not even see Ulfgar swing at him. A huge gloved fist slammed into Peter's brow. Everything went bright for an instant. Then vice-like fingers clamped around his throat, yanking him off his feet. Peter struggled, kicked, and clawed at Ulfgar's hand and arm, but Ulfgar's grip was like steel. The elves fell back, surrounding the lady, leaving Peter to his fate, but not the devils. They rushed in. Rex, Drake, Huck, Dash, and even Cricket came splashing out of the pond. They circled Ulfgar, no clacking teeth or wild war cries, only grim, resolute eyes. Ulfgar sneered at them, held Caliburn before Peter's face.
"One touch!" Ulfgar shouted. "And your precious chief here is Ash!"
The devils glanced at each other, unsure, their helplessness stripping them of their savagery. Ulfgar tightened his grip. Peter let out a strangled cry, felt the bones in his neck would snap at any moment.
"Back!"
Ulfgar said. The devils fell back.
"Ulfgar," the witch called. "Heed me, Ulfgar. If you taste his blood, you will not like what you find."
The witch smiled and wet her green teeth with her tongue. Ulfgar dismissed her with a sneer.
"Modron,"
Ulfgar commanded.
"Look at me. Look at me!"
The witch lifted the lady into a sitting position.
"Here now, dearie. Let's not disappoint Ulfgar. Do take a look. You won't want to miss this. That I promise."
"Modron!" Ulfgar called.
The lady opened her eyes.
"Look what I've caught! Something dear to your heart!"
He shook Peter.
"Does he remind you of your little maiden? Watch, Modron. Watch your precious boy burn."
The lady shook her head and raised a quivering hand. Ulfgar grinned, his eyes flashed. He took the black blade, set it against Peter's cheek, and slowly slid the edge down, cutting a long gash into the side of the boy's face. Heat bloomed across Peter's cheek. He cried out, and Ulfgar tossed him to the ground. Cricket screamed. The devils, Tengnos, the elves, all froze, all stared in wide-eyed dread. Peter clutched his cheek, his heart thudding in his chest. He wanted to run, but there was nowhere to run, not from the poison. It was in his blood. He felt its heat course through his veins. He waited for the pain, for the burning. But the burning never came. Only the warmth spreading through his body. Peter pulled his hand from his face, found no blood. Touched the wound, felt it growing smaller, shrinking, disappearing. Ulfgar's smile faded. He looked on, confused. A laugh, a cackling laugh, came from the pond. It was the witch.
Oh, Ulfgar, you big, stupid ass. If you could see your face,
she laughed again.
I tried to warn you. Don't you see? Don't you understand? This can only mean one thing.
Ulfgar narrowed his eyes at her.
Think about it, you big oaf. The wound does not bleed. The sword does not burn him. Why, Ulfgar? What must that mean? Come now, you can do it.
Ulfgar's eyes went wide. He shook his head.
Yes, the witch said. You see, don't you? Yes, you do, my big stupid nephew. You see very well.
No, he said. No!
Seems the Horned One had more than one little bastard running around,
the witch laughed.
Oh, this is truly delicious,
she shook the lady.
See, Modron, I told you wouldn't want to miss it.
Ulfgar glared at the witch, pointed Caliburn at her.
You lie, witch! You are full of lies!
Peter made for his feet, and Ulfgar turned the black sword on him, held the jagged, broken point an inch from his heart.
Tricks! Lies! I will not!
Ulfgar's eyes flared. He cocked his head sideways, again as though listening to some unseen phantom. His face twisted into a mask of despair and pain.
Why?
He mewled.
Why must you forever torment me? Why do you hate me so? I have been the good son. Ever the good son.
Peter tried to ease away, and Ulfgar's eyes came into sharp focus, blaze with unfathomable hate.
You!
His face pinched into a knot.
You are an abomination!
He screeched, and shoved Caliburn into Peter's chest, drove the blade all the way through Peter's ribs and out his back. Blinding pain. Peter tried to scream, managed only a strangled gasp. Ulfgar twisted the blade sharply left, right, then yanked the weapon free. Peter dropped, rolled in the dirt, clutching, clawing at the deep wound. His mouth working, trying to breathe. He felt air escape between his fingers, heard, felt, a horrible sucking come from the wound as the air left his punctured lung. Ulfgar laughed, a high, strained sound almost like wailing. He reared back for a second thrust when the devils rushed in. Rex dove in low, recklessly, going for Ulfgar's knee, forcing Ulfgar to switch his thrust from Peter to him. Ulfgar missed, the blade driving into the dirt. The boy slashed Ulfgar's leg. Dash drove his spear into Ulfgar's stomach. The spear punched through the mail, sunk deep into Ulfgar's gut. Ulfgar let out a loud grunt, stumbled back.
Drake and Huck were there, attacking from behind, Huck hacking low while Drake cut high. Even through his pain, Peter admired their bravery, cunning, and coordination. For a moment it looked good for the devils, looked to Peter like they might stand a chance, might be able to stop this monster, or at least drive him back. Then Ulfgar yanked Caliburn from the ground, spun around. The sword seemed to weigh nothing in his hand, and his speed caught them all by surprise. He struck Rex in the side of the head, cleaving the boy's skull open. Blood and brains followed the sword's wake as it cleaved through Huck's arm, then neck. Both boys collapsed into lifeless heaps. Drake ducked back. The sword missed his head but nicked his shoulder, the slightest scratch, yet his face showed he knew his fate, knew what that one scratch meant. An instant later, a dark patch bloomed, crawled up his neck, across his chest. Drake screamed but did not stop fighting. Even as his skin smoldered and peeled away from the bone, he rushed Ulfgar. Ulfgar knocked the boy away with his fist, leaving him to burn.
No,
Peter said in a strained rasp, almost out of his mind with pain, anger, and frustration. Ulfgar was killing the devils, his devils, murdering every one of them while he lay in the dirt.
Fuck,
he spat. Tears squeezed from his eyes as he forced himself to his hands and knees. He clutched his chest. There was no blood. The pain turned slowly to warmth, and he realized he could breathe again, that the wound was healing.
The sword. That cursed sword.
Only Dash and Cricket were left. Dash jumped between Peter and Ulfgar. Cricket slid over next to him. She looked so small before Ulfgar's towering mass. Peter could see her fear, the utter terror in her face. Yet still she stood, spear ready, just as Sikiyu had shown her. Peter pushed slowly to his feet. Ulfgar laughed and came for them.
Devils, devils, devils forever!
Dash screamed and charged Ulfgar, swinging with all his strength and speed. Ulfgar met the attack with a crushing blow, cutting through Dash's sword and forearm, catching the boy in the stomach, almost slicing him in two. Dash flew back into Cricket and Peter, knocking them over. Ulfgar raised Caliburn above his head.
Judgment comes! He screamed.
A spear tore through the side of Ulfgar's neck. His eyes went wide with surprise. Peter blinked. There was Nick. His face hard, focused, no trace of the confused, scared boy he'd found in the park such a short time ago. This boy was lean and dangerous, his cold, piercing eyes, the eyes of a killer. Nick shoved the spear deeper into Ulfgar's neck and shouted,
"Get away from her!"
Ulfgar dropped Caliburn, clutched the spear in both hands, gagging and strangling as he tried to wrestle it from Nick's grasp. Nick gave the spear a final hard thrust and leaped over to Cricket. He grabbed her by the arm, pulled her to her feet and cried,
"Cricket, run!"
Ulfgar pulled the spear from his neck and fixed on Nick. Peter tried to shout, tried to get up in time. Ulfgar threw the spear, catching Nick in the back, just below his shoulder blade. The spearhead sprung out from the front of Nick's chest. Nick looked at it for a moment, then collapsed to his knees.
Nick!
Cricket screamed.
Run,
Nick said weakly, and fell over. Ulfgar and Peter locked eyes across the bodies of the dead and dying, the heat of their hate boring into each other. Peter's chest heaved, his lips peeled back, his golden eyes flared, his fingers arched to rip away Ulfgar's flesh, to tear his eyes from their sockets.
Caliburn, the deadly black blade, lay in the dirt between them. The two half-brothers stared at it as one. Peter was quicker. He dove for the sword, snatching up the blade and coming up in a roll. He swung for Ulfgar. The sword weighed nothing in his hands. It sliced through the giant's armor like paper, cutting deep into Ulfgar's thigh. Ulfgar stumbled back, fear in his eyes. Peter felt the bite of the sword's spiked hilt, felt its heat, felt its pulse within him, felt its power. He heard the horned one then, calling his name. Peter could see that Ulfgar heard it too.
No!
Ulfgar cried.
I am the one! Me, father! Me!
Peter hefted the blade and moved in, circling, stalking the giant. Ulfgar backed away, his haunted eyes rolling wildly in their sockets, frantically searching for some escape. His heel caught on Huck's body, and he tumbled over backward. Peter was at him.
No!
Ulfgar cried. Peter brought the black sword high over his head and down with all his strength. Ulfgar put up his hands, tried to block the strike, but Caliburn sliced through his wrists, leaving two steaming stumps. Ulfgar wailed with outrage and pain. Peter brought the sword down again. This time the blade bit deep into Ulfgar's neck. Ulfgar's face twisted in agony. An awful strangling sound gurgled from the deep gash across his throat. Peter grinned, letting the sword take him, reveled in its song as he brought the blade down over and over. Ulfgar's wounds tried to heal, but Peter kept hacking and hacking, chopping and re-chopping until, at last, Ulfgar's head rolled away and his body fell limp. The mist swirled and danced around Peter. He felt the horned one's wild blood, awakened by the sword, by the death and carnage, pumping in his veins. Peter's golden eyes blazed. He set his foot atop Ulfgar's chest, pointed Caliburn heavenward, threw back his head, and howled. The call echoed across the park. Peter closed his eyes, listening to his own heartbeat. He heard men shouting in the distance and the warbling sirens growing louder, and knew the mist was thinning again. The lady's voice came to him, softly, but pushing all other sounds into the background.
Peter.
Peter opened his eyes, saw the lady. She appeared a little stronger now, and some of the color had returned to her eyes. She beamed at him.
Peter,
she whispered,
you are my champion forever.
Peter glanced from Ulfgar's body to the bodies of the flesh eaters. He jabbed Ulfgar's head with the tip of Caliburn. Ulfgar's lips quivered, and his eyes flickered. Peter wondered if the head was still alive somehow, if the sword's spell could do that. He hoped so as he kicked the head into the pond. He stared at the bubbles as it sunk below the water and disappeared from sight. Then Peter strolled toward the lady, a triumphant smile spreading across his face as his heart swelled.
Yes, I am your champion.
A ragged sob cut the silence. Cricket cradled Nick in her lap. There was blood trickling from his mouth, but the boy was still alive. His eyes were on Peter, watching him, judging him. Peter's smile faded. Peter stuck the deadly sword into the earth, came and knelt beside them. He clasped Nick's shoulder. The boy's skin was clammy.
Nick, you fought bravely. You're a true devil. You saved—
Cut the bullshit, Nick snapped. Peter flinched. Nick caught hold of his arm.
How can you continue to play this game?
he hissed through clenched teeth.
Are you truly that blind?
He pointed at the smoldering husks of Rex, Huck, Drake.
Look! Look at them! They're all dead! All your devils! Don't you even care? Or do they no longer matter?
Peter tried not to look, but there was no escaping the wide, staring eyes of the dead, the stink of guts, blood, and burned flesh hanging in the mist. Nothing noble or romantic, just death. He tried to pull away, but Nick held him, his face tight with anger and pain.
Don't you dare look away from them. Not after they gave their lives for you, stood by you when no one else would.
No, Peter said. They died for the lady. They died honorably defending their queen.
She's not their queen, you stupid fuck.
Nick coughed and blood spattered his chin.
It was you they worshipped. You they followed. And look where you led them. Look! You traded their lives for the lady. Your goddamn precious lady. Was it worth it? Was she worth all their lives?
Peter knocked Nick's hand away.
No,
Peter growled.
It's not like that. You're always twisting things around.
But even as he shook his head, he saw their faces. Not in death, but in life. Those vibrant children who had followed him through the mist on a promise had laughed, cried, played, fought, and died alongside of him. Peter caught sight of Danny and the captain climbing out from the far side of the pool. He leaped to his feet, reached for Caliburn, then stopped, glanced back at Nick, at Nick's hard, cold eyes.
What are you waiting for? Nick said. Go on. Kill them, too. More blood for your goddamn queen, right?
Peter let out a hard breath and just stood there, watching as the captain and Danny disappeared into the trees.
Peter,
the lady called.
Come to me.
She sounded stronger. Tangnost carried her in his arms. The elves, the witch, the three girls, and the Barghest all surrounded her. She smiled at him.
It is time to go.
Nick coughed, spat up a mouthful of blood. Peter looked, as though for the first time, at the spear protruding from Nick's chest. The boy was so pale. Pain creased his eyes.
Hold on, Nick, Peter said. You're going to be all right.
He dashed over to the lady.
Modron, Peter called. Hurry, help him before it's too late.
The lady reached for Peter, took his hand, and smiled sadly at him.
I'm sorry, but there's nothing I can do for him.
Of course there is. You can heal him. You can try.
Peter, she said sternly. We've no time for their kind. Not now.
Their kind?
Peter stared at her.
Peter, please don't look at me that way. I know the human children are dear to you, but they are back in their place now. It is up to their gods to help them. We have to look after our own.
Nick is our own. He's earned his place 1,000 times over. You owe it to him.
The lady's eyes flared.
Enough of this, she said sharply. Would you have me risk everything for him? I must conserve my strength. There are many trials ahead.
Peter grabbed the lady's hand.
Please, he said. Just do what you can. Anything. Please. I'm begging you.
Her face softened.
Peter, don't fret so. You need to let go. Put their kind behind you. You are my warlord now. Your place awaits. Now, I will hear no more of this. Tagnost, we need to leave before all is lost.
Peter looked from face to face, the witch's smirk, the girl's wicked smiles, the cold eyes of the elves. Only Tagnost seemed genuinely saddened by the dying boy.
I'm sorry, Peter, the old troll said. I wish there was something I could do.
Now come, Peter, the lady said. We must make haste.
They all turned away, leaving Peter standing there, the slain bodies of his devils scattered around him. Nick felt a chill, a numbing coldness crawling toward his heart.
I'm not going to make it, he thought. I'm never going to see my mother again.
Tears rolled down his cheeks.
I have to tell her I'm sorry. Tell her how much I love her. Have to.
Peter,
Nick called weakly. Peter didn't hear him.
Peter, Cricket called. Peter!
Peter slowly pulled his eyes away from the lady, walked over, and knelt down next to them.
I need you to do something for me,
Nick said. Peter nodded distractedly.
You have to find my mother,
Nick coughed. It was getting hard to speak.
Tell her I love her. Tell her I'm sorry. And Peter...
Nick clutched Peter's arm, pulled him close.
Kill them. Kill Marco and his friends. Will you do that?
Peter didn't answer. He glanced to the lady. Tagnost was carrying her away, the refugees of Avalon following them toward the harbor.
Peter, look at me. You made me a promise. You swore. No games this time. You have to do this for me, okay?
I'll do what I can, Nick.
No, swear it! Fucking swear it! Put your fingers out where I can see them and swear.
Peter's eyes dropped.
Nick, I can't. Not now. There are still things left to do.
God damn you, Nick cried. Listen to me. She lives near the park where you found me. It's on Carroll Street, just off 4th Avenue, the blue house, the only blue house on the street. Did you get that? Carroll Street, the blue house. You can't miss it.
Nick coughed, spat out a mouthful of blood.
Go there. Kill Marco. You owe me. You fucking owe me.
Peter nodded, but said nothing more. Cricket was sobbing. Nick's hands went numb. Peter's arms slid from his grasp. He wanted to say more, wanted to make Peter swear, to see in his eyes that he would indeed kill Marco. But it was too hard to speak. He smiled weakly at the golden-eyed boy.
The lady,
Nick whispered.
She has stolen your soul.
Nick's vision blurred.
So cold,
he thought, and wished his mother was here. Wished he could see her one more time, feel her warm arms around him. That would be so nice, so good. He closed his eyes. Peter watched Nick's hand drop lifelessly to the dirt. Cricket stared at Nick. She was no longer crying, just staring. Her eyes were distant, lost. The lady's voice drifted to Peter across the last remnants of the mist.
Peter, come to me.
The troop waited for him in the shadowy trees.
Cricket,
Peter said.
Let's go.
Cricket looked at Peter as though he were a stranger, then into the shadows, to where the lady waited. Cricket shook her head.
No, I'm not going.
So much awaits. We must...
Peter stopped, let out a weary sigh. He touched Cricket's shoulder.
Goodbye, Cricket.
She didn't look up. Peter stood, pulled Caliburn from the dirt, studied the black, broken blade.
I was there, he thought, when this blade was broken. I stood by his side, the horned one, my father, when he carried it into battle.
He tugged Ulfgar's cape from his stiff body, used it to wrap the deadly blade. He took a last long look at the dead, a hard look into each of their faces, then into Nick's face.
I won't forget.
He turned and followed the lady. Peter caught up with her at the battery. The mist had drifted away and he could see the Statue of Liberty glowing green in the harbor. One of the elves leaped up onto the seawall, pointed down the way.
There, a vessel.
The elf squinted his narrow eyes and said with surprise,
It's the longboat.
Peter helped Tangnost carry the lady down the rocks to the blackened hull of the great boat. One by one, the last refugees of Avalon boarded. The witch, her daughters, Tangnost and the lady, the elves, finally the Bargast, scampering up the bow and perching like gargoyles along the magnificent dragon head. When it came Peter's turn, he hesitated.
Hurry, Peter, the lady said.
Peter set a hand on the rail, started to pull himself aboard, then stopped.
Peter?
He clenched his jaw and slowly shook his head. The lady gave him a stern look.
I can't. Don't jest, the lady said. There's something I have to do first. You don't mean the silly promise you made that boy?
Peter nodded.
Come aboard, Peter, the lady commanded. This is no time for games.
Peter opened his pouch and pulled out 3 apples. The lady's eyes grew round.
Avalok seed, she said in awe. How?
Peter handed her the apples. She cradled them to her breast like newborns.
Peter, do you know what this means? Why, Avalon can truly be reborn.
Peter nodded again.
Peter,
her voice dropped low, seductive.
Everything you ever desired awaits.
Her piercing cerulean eyes glowed.
A new world, my champion, and you will sit by my side, sharing all the magical delights.
Her voice deepened.
See it, Peter. See your rightful place. See your destiny fulfilled.
Peter saw her vision. He, the wild warlord of the Shi, romping through the magical forest with the beasts and wild fairies at his side, lord of all he sees. And it was indeed everything he had ever desired.
Your heart is heavy for the children,
she continued in that low, deep, lulling tone.
Peter, that is understandable, but that will fall behind you in the new day. Once you are by my side, once all of fairy dances about your feet, you will forget them and the pain will fade.
Forget them? Peter said, shaking away the vision.
No.
His voice was strong and resolute.
I will not forget them. I will never forget them.
He took a step back.
Peter, you will come. You must come. A new world is a fragile thing. It's your place to carry Caliburn, to defend Avalon. You cannot deny your birthright. It is your duty. Now come aboard. I command it.
Peter held her eyes and shook his head.
I made a promise.
He dropped the bundled sword in the boat next to the lady.
Goodbye, Modron.
The lady's eyes flared, and she bared her teeth, snarling.
Modron,
the witch laughed.
His father's blood has been awakened within him. Seems your charms no longer rule his heart.
The lady glared at her sister. Then it was as though all the air left her, and she sagged against Tagnost.
Peter Bird,
she said, sounding weak, tired, defeated.
My little Mabon, don't leave me. I need you.
Peter pulled the star necklace from around his neck, took the lady's hand and laid it in her palm.
I'm not Mabon,
he said softly. The lady stared at the lifeless star. She looked impossibly sad. Then her face grew grim, and for a moment Peter saw the lady he'd met all those summers ago. Not the fragile woman, but the goddess, the proud daughter of Avaloch, the queen of Avalon. She pulled herself up straight, held out Mabon's star.
Do this for me. Keep it safe.
Peter saw that its golden glow had returned.
When you're done playing games, bring it home to me.
Peter accepted the star, but slipped it into his pocket rather than around his neck. He looked to Tagnost.
Goodbye, old friend.
Tagnost let out a deep, heavy sigh, shook his head sadly from side to side, but clasped Peter's hand firmly in his.
May Avaloch go with you.
The last tendrils of the mist swirled away. Peter heard men shouting far back in the park.
We must go,
Tagnost said, and let go of Peter.
Peter,
the lady said,
come home to me. Make it soon.
Yes, agreed the witch, and take good care of your eyes. One of them belongs to me.
She grinned, showing him her long, green teeth. The lady set her hand in the bay. A swell of water gently rose beneath the boat, and they drifted from the rocks. The swell built behind the boat and pushed it rapidly away. Peter stood there until he could no longer see them, until he heard the squawk of a radio and heavy footsteps coming down the walkway. Then he slipped away, disappearing into the shadows. The sirens faded as Peter put the park farther and farther behind him. He no longer crept through alleyways, walking instead along the main streets. He ignored the hard stares and wary looks, not caring who might notice him, hardly watching where he was going.
So much lost,
he thought, his heart so heavy he felt he might suffocate.
What have I done?
Again he saw the disappointment on the lady's face, the look in Nick's eyes as he died. Peter set his jaw and pushed them from his mind, plodding onward into the night, concentrated solely on putting one foot in front of the other, as though he could truly leave all the pain behind. He left Manhattan, scarcely noticing as he crossed the Brooklyn Bridge. Before long, the high-rises gave way to warehouses, then apartments and attached houses. He entered Prospect Park and soon found himself face to face with the green climbing turtle.
Nick,
Peter whispered.
I'm so sorry.
The turtle stared back with its ridiculous grin. Tears bit at Peter's eyes. He wiped at them and gritted his teeth.
So damn sorry.
The tears kept coming until a harsh sob shook his frame. He slumped against the turtle as tears for Sikiyu, Abraham, Gaul, his mother, Nick, and all the devils that had died for him poured freely down his cheeks. He slid to the grass. The list was long, But Peter sat there, eyes clenched, arms tight about his knees, until he could name every one, every single one. Eventually, a brisk wind blew. Peter opened his eyes, inhaled deeply. Warmth, a trace of spring. His skin prickled. The night suddenly felt alive, as though the trees, birds, and bugs were watching him. He caught sight of a sparkle, then another, and another. They raced to him, zipping along just above the dewy grass, circling him, spiraling round and round.
"Fairy folk,"
he said in wonder. Something blue shot past Peter's head, whirled about, and hovered right before him. It was one of the pixies, a girl with white, wispy hair. She hissed at him, then rejoined the flock as they frolicked about the trees. Peter heard a whispering in the leaves, a voice calling for him to come dance with the night. It was his father. Peter recalled how the Horned One had danced with him and the devils around the great fire, granted them a place in Avalon.
"You chose me, father, to stand beside you at Marrow Cove, to fight by your side. Honored me, not Ulfgar, but me."
Understanding dawned on Peter, and he began to grin. His father had indeed left him a gift, a great gift, and not the deadly sword. His father had claimed him when no other would, because the Horned One's spirit lorded over all wild things, whether pagan or she, of this world or fairy. And now his father had passed that spirit on to him. Peter jumped to his feet, laughed long and loud, as though he owned the park, daring any to challenge him. He set back his head and howled, a primeval call not heard by men for 1,000 years, one that made them remember why they are afraid of the deep, dark forest.
"I've no need of banners, titles, crowns, magic swords, or gilded courts. I'll never be confined to any realm. My domain is wherever the wild wind blows."
"I am the Horned One," Peter called. "The forest spirit, the lord of all wild things."
He dug in his pouch, pulled out one of Avalok's apples, and admired it. It was a sacred thing of remarkable beauty, the revered symbol of Avalon. Peter took a bite.
"Yum."
Smacking loudly, he headed off to find a house. Not just any house, but a blue house on Carroll Street. His golden eyes sparkled and he touched the hilt of his knife. He looked forward to meeting Marco and his pals. He intended to have some fun with them, a really good time, because it had been so long since he'd had a really good time. He felt his step lighten. The sunbird came to mind, how wild and free it had been, free to fly wherever it fancied, whenever it pleased. Peter felt like that now, as though he could go anywhere, do anything, almost as though he could fly. He glanced up at the stars, and a wicked smile lit his face.
"Time to play," he whispered to them, and winked.
And the stars winked back, for Peter's smile is a most contagious thing. Author's Note, or an Ode to Peter Pan. Like so many before me, I am fascinated by the tale of Peter Pan, the romantic idea of an endless childhood amongst the magical playground of Neverland. But, like so many, my mind's image of Peter Pan had always been that of an endearing, puckish prankster,
the undue influence of too many Disney films and peanut butter commercials. That is, until I read the original Peter Pan. Not the watered-down version you'll find in the children's bookshops these days, but James Barry's original and politically uncorrected version. And then I began to see the dark undertones and to appreciate just what a wonderfully bloodthirsty, dangerous, and at times cruel character Peter Pan truly is. Foremost, the idea of an immortal boy hanging about nursery windows and seducing children away from their families for the sake of his ego and to fight his enemies is at the very least disturbing. Though this is fairly understandable when you read in The Little White Bird, Peter Pan's first appearance, that as an infant he left his own nursery to play with the fairies in the park, but upon his return found the windows barred and his mother nursing another little boy. Just the sort of traumatic event to leave anyone a bit maladjusted. Rejected, Peter returned to the fairy world and apparently decided things would be a bit more fun if he had a few companions. And, not being one to worry on niceties, he simply kidnapped them. But what happens to these children after that? Here is a quote from the original Peter Pan. "The boys on the island vary, of course, in numbers, according as they get killed and so on. And when they seem to be growing up, which is against the rules, Peter thins them out. But at this time, there were six of them, counting the twins as two." Thins them out? Huh? What does that mean? Does Peter kill them, like culling a herd? Does he send them away somewhere? If so, where? Or does Peter just put them in such peril that the crop is in need of constant replenishing? That one paragraph forever changed my perception of Peter Pan from that of a high-spirited rascal to something far more sinister. Thins them out, the words kept repeating in my head. How many children had Peter stolen? How many had died? How many had been thinned out? Peter himself said, "To die will be an awfully big adventure." There is certainly no lack of bloodletting in Peter Pan, pirates massacring Indians and so forth, but those are adults killing each other. Nothing new there. Much more intriguing to me is that murderous group of children, the Lost Boys. With them, Peter Pan has turned bloodletting into a sport, has taught them not only to kill without conscience or remorse, but also to have a damn good time doing it. At one point, the boys proudly debate the number of pirates they'd just slaughtered. Was it 15 or 17? And how can any child not enjoy such lines as, "They fell easy prey to the reeking swords of the boys," or "He lifted up one boy with his hook and was using him as a buckler," when another, who had just passed his sword through Mullins, sprang into the fray? Nothing like a good spilling of entrails to liven things up. And more chilling is Peter's ability to do all these things, the kidnapping, the murder, all without a trace of conscience. "I forget them after I kill them," he, Peter, replied carelessly. Once I pondered these unsettling elements, I began to wonder what this children's book would be like if the veil of Barry's lyrical prose were peeled back, if the violence and savagery were presented in stark, grim reality. How would children really react to being kidnapped and thrust into such a situation? How hard would it be for them to fall under the spell of a charismatic sociopath, to shuck off the morality of civilization and become cold-blooded killers? Judging from what goes on in modern gang culture, and seeing how quick teens can be to define their own morals, to justify any action no matter how horrific, I believe it wouldn't be that hard. And these thoughts were the seeds for The Child Thief. Knowing that I didn't want to simply retell Barry's Peter Pan, but instead create my own Peter, my own world, and the darker story behind the fairy tales, I began to dig into the same Scottish fairy stories, myths, and legends that originally inspired James Barry himself.
and I was delighted to find a treasure trove of folk tales from which to pull together the mythology for the child thief. Since these legends helped steer and form this novel, I thought some of you might find them interesting and have listed them below. I found the details to these myths varied to some degree from source to source, from region to region, and I took liberal use of many of them for the child thief. But following here are the most common threads and elements I have drawn upon. Avalon. Avalon, or Ynys Afathog in Welsh, is one of the Otherworld islands. It was originally ruled by Avaloch with his daughter Modron. It is where Caliburn, Excalibur, was forged, and where King Arthur was taken by Morgan le Fay, Modron, to be healed of his wounds after the Battle of Camlann. Like the name of Avalon, from Aval or Apple, the apple is one of the most recognized symbols of Avalon. With counterparts in the Greek Hesperides, the Norse apples of youth, and the Judeo-Christian fruit of the tree of life. Avalon is closely associated with a similar otherworld island, Turnanog, called in English the Land of Eternal Youth or the Land of the Ever Young, and thus I combined both mystical islands to some degree. Turnanog is perhaps best known from the myth of Oisin, one of the few mortals who lived there, and Niamh of the Golden Hair. It was where the Tuatha De Danann, or she, settled when they left Ireland's surface. Turnanog was considered a place beyond the edges of the map, located far to the west. It could be reached by either an arduous voyage or an invitation from one of its fairy inhabitants. The isle is visited by various Irish heroes in the Ectre and Imrim tales popular during the Middle Ages. Turnanog is a place where sickness and death do not exist. It is a place of eternal youth and beauty. Avaloch. Avaloch, also Afathog and Avalok, was the son of Nodens, god of healing. He was one of the Celtic gods of the underworld. He ruled Avalon, where he lived with his daughter Modron and her sisters. Modron. In Welsh mythology, Modron, Divine Mother, was a daughter of Avaloch, derived from the Gaulish goddess Matrona. She is regarded as the prototype of the Lady of the Lake, Morgan le Fay, from Arthurian legend. She was the mother of Mabon, who bears her name as Mabon ap Modron, Mabon, son of Modron. Mabon. In Welsh mythology, Mabon, Divine Son, was the son of Modron. He is synonymous with the ancient British god Mapanus, and probably equivalent to the Irish god Angus Mac Og. Mabon was stolen from his mother 3 days after his birth. He then lived in Annwn until he was rescued by Kelach. Because of his time in Annwn, Mabon stayed a young adult forever. The Horned One. The Horned One I based in part on the Great Horned God, a modern syncretic term used amongst Wiccan-influenced neo-pagans, which unites numerous male nature gods out of such widely dispersed mythologies as the Celtic Cernunnos, Hearn the Hunter, English legend, Pashupati in Hindu, and the Greek Pan. A number of figures from British folklore, though normally depicted without horns, are nonetheless considered related, namely Puck, Robin Goodfellow, and the Green Man. To the Christians, the horned god is the devil. Other influences. The names Tangnost, meaning tooth gnasher, and his brother Tangrisnir, meaning tooth grinder, are the names of the two billy goats that pull Thor's chariot. Ginny Greenteeth, or Jenny Greenteeth, from English folklore is a river hag, similar to a peg powler. She would pull children or the elderly into the water and drown them. She was often described as green-skinned, with long hair and sharp teeth. Famous in northern England, a Bargest is a form of black ghost dog or goblin dog. A Hissi is a mischievous spirit or god from Finnish folklore. In Irish and Scottish folklore, the Slua were the spirits of the restless dead. Some consider them to carry with them the souls of innocent people that they have captured. I've taken many liberties with the locations in and around New York, but there really is an old church topped with a white cross set amongst the skyscrapers of Lower Manhattan. It is located just across the street from Battery Park and the Staten Island Ferry Terminal. Standing within the arch of the steeple is an angelic statue of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, her arms open, welcoming home any wayward pilgrim. Fairy tales of old were cautionary tales full of ghastly endings, serving as hard lessons for young and old alike. I, for one, believe that all myths and legends are sparked by some real event, person, or other. So, should you find yourself alone in a dark corner of Prospect Park, or any other wild and untamed place, and the fireflies suddenly seem emboldened, the air alive with the silvery mist, listen closely, and you just might catch the distant echo of a boy's laughter. And whatever you should decide to do then, just remember, you've been warned. Brahm, February 20th, 2009. This recording of The Child Thief by Brahm was produced and directed by Bob Dion and performed by Kirby Hayborn. It was recorded, edited, mixed, and mastered by Dion Audio Services, Inc. We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio. For more information about the broad range of titles from Harper Audio, Harper Children's Audio, and Cadman, please visit our website at www.harperaudio.com. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.